Wish you all a happy third Sunday of Easter. We're now 3 weeks in, and there's a risk of just returning to the old way. But we shan't. What does the resurrection matter? We have weeks after the Easter event to reflect upon what is the purpose and what effect does the resurrection have on my life? Does it? Every year, our mother, the church, gives us Easter and several weeks to reflect. What difference does it make in my life that Jesus rose from the dead? Or are we busied with the things of life and have much time to think about it? What difference does it make? We got to ask ourselves that question. At the head table in a school cafeteria, one of the nuns, Sister Margaret Mary, placed a big bowl of bright red, fresh, juicy apples for the kids. Beside the bowl, she placed a note which read, "Take only one. Remember, Jesus is watching." At the other end of the table was a bowl filled with freshly baked chocolate chip cookies still warm from the oven. Beside that bowl was a little note that had been scribbled out in a child's handwriting, which read, "Take all you want. Jesus is watching the apples." According to Sister Margaret Mary, Jesus' purpose in his resurrection was to keep an eye on us. Make sure we don't screw up, and if we do, take note of it. And then if we have more good deeds than bad, then maybe when I die and I'm at the pearly gates and I see Peter, Jesus just might let me squeeze through. That's not Jesus. And that's not the purpose of the resurrection. Yeah, he's present. Yes, he's watching. But for what? For what? And we have this beautiful recounting of the road to Emmaus, which I think is extremely valuable for us. So let's try and pull something out of it, shall we? Because there's something for us. What had just happened? It's Easter Sunday. Good Friday, Holy Saturday, Easter Sunday. It had only been 3 days since Jesus was dead as a doornail on a cross and then placed in a tomb. Two of his disciples, okay, not the apostles, two of them, one's named Cleopas, are heading out of town, out of Jerusalem, going to Emmaus, debating, downtrodden, hopeless. And someone appears to them, walking with them, and starts to talk to them. And something happens in their hearts, and all of a sudden, they invite this person in once they had arrived at their destination, and their lives are changed forever in the breaking of the bread. There is a paradigm, brothers and sisters, for our lives. This gospel is for us. Because those disciples were Jesus' friends. Okay, they knew him. They heard him say, "They're going to kill me, but I will rise after 3 days." They knew who he was. They'd heard the message. And it's Easter Sunday. And where are they going? Heading out of Jerusalem. Sad, quarreling, and without hope. They had just seen him. These are his friends, okay? So that's why it's for us. Friends of Jesus. This out of Jerusalem is indicative of heading on the wrong way. Away from the action, away from God. Because the Holy of Holies was there. Jesus was there, and they were heading away. On the wrong path. Wrong direction, without hope, quarreling. What just happened? And then Jesus appears to them. But there's this all-important note. Their eyes were prevented from recognizing him. Imagine that. It's not like it had been 10 years and Jesus had gotten older, was wearing a beard and had a few wrinkles, like happens to us, and maybe you don't recognize an old friend you haven't seen in 10 years. It had been 3 days. and their eyes were prevented from recognizing him. That's an important detail, don't you think? Yes. What happened that they could not recognize him? We're talking about this at our men's group on Thursday, and someone wisely pointed out, said, you know, if you're not expecting to see someone, and they're there in the room or in the crowd or next to you, you may not recognize them. If you're not expecting, if it's the last person you'd expect to see, you may not recognize them because the mind has already made up its mind. I know this to be true because I've been a stinker since I was a little kid. I'm still a bit of a stinker. And when I was in Rome, one of my joys was surprising my parents in coming home. I got one visit a year. And I'd lie to mom and say, you know, I'll be coming home in a couple weeks. And I would come home early. The first time I did this, my flight came in late. And I rang the doorbell. It was past 9 o'clock. My parents are in bed by about 8. My dad comes, I hear the footsteps running to the door, no shirt on. He opens the door and says, you almost gave me a heart attack. He said, when the doorbell doesn't ring here, ever. Where they live in North Bismarck. Ringing after 9 o'clock, he said, I was sure someone was dead. It was the police. Something terrible had happened. And he got over it and said, welcome home, son. So I changed my strategy the second time. Following year, I came home early. Earlier in the day, it was about 4:30, and the flight arrived. I contacted my wonderful sister. I said, any idea where mom and dad might be right now? Said, well, it's summer, it's Tuesday. By that point, about 5 o'clock, she said, I think I know exactly where they are. Wings and Rings has a special every Tuesday. I said, perfect. Let's do this. And I went and found them. I saw their car and entered Wings and Rings sheepishly to make sure they didn't see me. Fortunately, they were sitting at the far end of the room at the bar with their backs to me. Perfect. And I slithered in and took the chair that happened to be open next to my father. And I asked, sir, is this seat taken? Looks a little, no. As if, why would I ask? And then I sit down and I just wait. I got one trip home a year. They hadn't seen me in a while. And I think I nudged him or bumped his elbow and got him to look at me, and he looked and he looked and he blinked and he pulled back and he said, what are you doing here? He said, I almost gave him another heart attack that day. Why? It took him a while to recognize me. He didn't recognize the voice or the face of his favorite child. Me. My sister is here today. She knows that's not true. She was the favorite. Why didn't he recognize me? It was an amazing moment when my father was looking at me in the face and was blinking and something wasn't registering because he did not expect to see me and was a bit incredulous of the fact that I was there. Do you get the point here? The two disciples who very well knew the face and the voice of Jesus, just a few days after his death, on that first Easter Sunday, he appeared to them. Their eyes, they could not see him or recognize him. You know how long the journey is from Jerusalem to Emmaus? It says in there, for those of you who paid close attention, for $100, too late, 7 miles. 7 mile journey. And it took them that long to recognize because they did not expect to see him. Why? It tells us in here. We were hoping that he would be the one to redeem Israel. And then we saw him on a cross. And then we saw him dead in the tomb. And that's not the way we wanted it. So it must all be over. And they were debating what was going on. And they were downtrodden. Because it wasn't the way they wanted it. And so they'd given up hope. They were on the wrong path. And what happens? Jesus shows up for them. Comes with them. walks with them on the wrong path, are headed the wrong way. Boy, is that good news. We don't have to be headed the right way in order to meet Jesus. He's not there at the destination waiting for us to find our way to him. On the contrary, the disciples who find themselves in difficult situations, when all seems lost, when my life isn't the way that I thought it was going to be and gall darn it, or this world isn't the way I thought it was going to be and gall, what's Jesus doing? He's not sitting there. Well, I hope you figure it out someday. Then I'll come see you. He runs to us and begins to walk with us, headed the wrong direction. Things seem hopeless and desperate. That's exactly what happened to these two disciples. And in the, as they walked with him, not even fully aware of his presence, but he was there. Whether they were aware of it or not, something began to change in their hearts. And they arrive at their destination, 7 miles from Jerusalem, and they find that their hearts were burning as he preached to them. So if my preaching gives you heartburn, maybe that's the point. If my preaching does, my jokes will. There, Jesus did something, and even when they weren't aware, because he was with them. And then in the breaking of the bread, and in the opening up of the word, their hearts were opened, and they said this beautiful prayer, "Stay with us, please. Stay with us. I'm sure you're really busy. You got to go." No, stay with us. And Jesus says, it's not in there, but I was hoping you would ask. "There's no place I'd rather be than with you and your home. You too, who doubted me. You two who didn't recognize me, there's no place I'd rather be than with you in your home." Through the power of these sacraments, the word, our hearts can experience Jesus and desire him all the more. When life's a little too much, things don't seem right, guess who's walking with you and me? Jesus. There's the point. When things seem desperate, how do we see him? If we expect to see him. It's called expectant faith. It's expecting a lot out of Jesus, and that's okay. People, expect less out of each other, and you'll be less miserable, and expect more out of Jesus, and we'll be more joyful. Expect less out of this world and more out of Jesus. They didn't see him because they didn't expect to see him. If we're headed the wrong way, if things seem lost, the guarantee is this: Jesus is there. Jesus, open our eyes that when life's too much, things seem desperate, we will know that you are there and we will expect to see you. Do we really believe in him that much? I hope we do. If not, Jesus, increase our faith for our journey and so that we can then bring others to the awareness and the knowledge of your presence. Amen.